call this meeting to order. Good afternoon. We're going to call this meeting to order. We're going to start off with Carter Jones introducing yourself.
Carter Jones, City Council President.
Tommy Carter, Council Auditor's Office.
Bruce Tyson, CPAC 4.
Daniel Energy Commission.
Dr. Keyshawn Hargrove, Chair, representing the President.
Charles Barr, Vice Chair, representing Council President.
Kim Pryor, representing Urban Core CPAC.
Jeff Clements, Council Research.
And we may begin. We have invited speaker Ms. Nina Sickler and Steve Long, Public Works Department. Again, thank you for coming.
All right, well, thank you all for having us here. Again, I'm Nina Sickler. I am the new Director of Public Works, and I started on August 28th. So had a chance to really get to know this department and all the good things we're doing. I've worked in Jacksonville for the last 30 years and served Public Works through the outside. But here today is actually Robin Smith. He's our Chief of Engineering and Construction Management and also our city engineer. And so he, specific to the questions that were asked, we reviewed those from the minutes of the last meeting, and he's here to answer any of those questions that you may have, and I'm here to support and provide any additional detail if necessary.
Again, not Steve Long. I'm Robin Smith. It's okay. And I am the Chief of Engineering and Construction. So, I don't have a presentation prepared, but I'm here to answer any questions you guys may have about construction or engineering.
We're glad to have you. Go ahead and get started. So many people had questions. Anyone want to get started with questions?
Through the chair, I guess I'll start because I was one that was kind of vocal about an issue that we were having. So I know that we contract out work to other individuals. The city employees don't always do the work. We contract it out. So my concern is with regard to the quality of work. The inspections. I believe we also hire an outside company to do inspections. We don't do those ourselves.
We use consultant inspectors.
VIA or something.
No, VIA is one of those consultants, but we have maybe a dozen different firms that we consult with.
Okay. So I live in historic Springfield, and so I'll just give you a couple of examples that I have been trying to get it through to somebody that we're paying for shoddy work. The first is our sidewalks, in that when we pay someone in to come in, and when they stamp them with, because I don't know if you're familiar with Springfield or not, but we have hexagon pavers that are, a lot of them are more than 100 years old. And when the city comes in and has to replace the sidewalk or whatnot, then they stamp them. Oftentimes it looks like a 3-year-old did it. They're all wonky. It's horrendous. So that's the kind of thing that I don't know why we don't take better pride in what our vendors are doing. And then one of the big things that I've really tried to get somebody to do something about was the large project that we recently finished, which was the West 4th Street brick reconstruction project. So they tore up the road from Pearl to Main and redid all of the infrastructure underneath and then relaid with historic brick. And it looks fantastic, but it wasn't done properly. We have areas in the block between Pearl and Silver that are ponding. And I requested the as-builts. And it is very clear in the as-builts that the grading is incorrect. And you can definitely see it on those documents that there is a dip. They also did not account for brick instead of curb and gutter. Obviously, a curb and gutter is going to have a faster flow than brick. And we have granite curbing, and with the brick goes right up against the granite. And so that particular flow is not going to be as quick as curb and gutter. And that's another reason that the water is ponding. When the inspections are done, we shouldn't have any, especially when the as-builts are done, we shouldn't have any dips. We shouldn't have any of that. But nobody will listen. And so it's a waste of our money to do things and pay for things that aren't done properly. And I just like to know what recourse we as a city have to have them fix these things. And quite honestly, it's been people within the city itself that really don't think it's an issue.
Okay, so appreciate that. So first of all, I'm glad you said that the project looks great, because I also think that project actually looks great.
It does.
It's one of the projects that, you know, we don't do a lot of things that are aesthetic, and so it's a project I'm very proud of.
Yes.
Now, let's talk about sidewalks for a second, right? And so fully aware of the pavers and the hexagonal stamping, and so just on the surface, the policy in Public Works is if we replace a sidewalk that has pavers today, the historic pavers, we replace that sidewalk with pavers. If the sidewalk today is stamped concrete, which at some point a decision was made to stamp concrete rather than use pavers, then we replace the new sidewalk with the stamped concrete. And so I know that there are places where that stamp works really well in a perfectly straight line and on a perfectly sized sidewalk. And when that sidewalk starts to become not perfectly straight, stamp doesn't really match up with the concrete in the ground. So there's a place on that 4th Street project where the sidewalk goes around a tree, and we specifically went around the tree to save the tree. And in that case, the round sidewalk and the very square stamp didn't really marry up great. And so we actually had them remove it and redo it once. Is it perfect? No. But, you know, I do feel that it came out as good as they could have made it with the stamped concrete. So, you know, I understand your concern about the stamped concrete. It is a challenge to make that stamp look as good as the pavers do, right? And so the pavers are more expensive. You know, there could be a decision in the future to just, instead of using a stamped concrete, just come back with the more expensive option, which is the pavers. But I think that's what you're talking about on the stamp. The stamp, you know, it's a stamp in concrete. It is, it's supposed to look like pavers, but it is not actually pavers. So I can appreciate that specifically right around that tree, it's not as aesthetically pleasing as it could be. And so
there are way more. There are so many examples of very poor craftsmanship. I can show you that do go down a straight sidewalk, and you look at it, and it's going kitty corner like this, and there's no ribbons on either side, which are supposed to be done. And you know, we're talking about fiscally responsible. Yes, the pavers are more expensive. However, when you need to make repairs, they're less expensive, because look at all the new construction going on right now. What they're doing is they're removing the pavers, stacking them up, and doing what they have to do, and then they can reset them. They're not having to call somebody else out and to reset forms and pour concrete and stamp things that it looked like a three-year-old did it, and it looks, I mean, it's for repairs and maintenance type thing. It may be more expensive up front, but in the long run, it's not as expensive.
Sure. And so to that point, when we install new pavers now, and the same as FDOT, new pavers actually go in on top of concrete. So we actually pour a sidewalk first and then put the pavers on top of that to keep the pavers from moving. So The historic pavers do not have that concrete base underneath it. And so you're not incorrect that the historic pavers, you can just move them out of the way, do what you need to do, and put them back.
Right.
However, if we built new pavers, it wouldn't be that way. There'd basically be a layer of concrete underneath that to make sure that that's our standard for build any pavers. Now that's how we build them. So that keeps the pavers locked in place and allows them not to, because the tree, you know, all the roots and things start heaving things up. And so that's why over time so many of those have been replaced. And you're not wrong. If you walk around that neighborhood, you can see lots of different stamps, different sizes. Some of them line up, some of them don't. You know, that's probably the last 40 years worth of work. So the only project that I'm specifically familiar with is the 4th Street one. And so I can appreciate that there are spots on that road where the stamp doesn't line up perfectly with everything else. So it's a valid concern. And, you know, again, that the policy about replacing stamped with stamped was made long before I worked here. And it's a policy decision that has a financial implication that we could certainly take a look at if that's a desire.
What about the construction of the dips and the ponding? And I'll also mention something else, too. The design of that particular area with the storm drains being recessed into the corners completely prevents the street sweepers, whenever they decide to come by, which is another, but from clearing that area. They are not even with the curb. They are recessed in. So we've got issues there that I've brought up the storm drain is something separate. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have even mentioned it. But my issue here is that the as-builts for that 4th Street project clearly show that there are dips and that it is not draining properly and that water is ponding on a very light rain. And I've brought this up to many people because I don't feel the inspectors were done, did what they were supposed to do, and we've paid for something that wasn't done properly. And that's what that's my issue with that particular project.
Sure. And so, you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at that. I would say that the contractor built the plans that we hired them to build. You know, you talked about having the brick up against the granite. There was a desire by the community to put as many bricks as possible and have as little concrete as possible. And as far as the kind of the pitch of the curbs and things, you know, we didn't rebuild the curbs. We didn't go outside of the right-of-way and change any grades. We matched every grade that was there because it's historic homes. If you start adjusting grades, you really start affecting outside of the right-of-way. And so if this was a brand-new road being built somewhere else in the city, we certainly would have made the roads have more pitch, and it would have been easier to control the water getting into those inlets, right? But because we were basically just matching what was there to, you know, already there, and not trying to go outside of the roadway and really reconstruct the whole right of way, which would have implicated front gates, you know, it would have been a lot more intrusive to the neighborhood. And so, again, you know, when you're retrofitting a project into an historic neighborhood, you can't always make sure that it meets all the current standards. I know that was built as well as it could be. And, you know, there are some places where the curb is very flat near the inlets, which, you know, can cause, you know, 6, 12 hours, 24 hours of standing water. But from our analysis is that there was no way that we could improve it without having much bigger implications to the right-of-way.
I disagree, but I'd love to have you out and let me show you what I'm talking about if you're amenable to that.
Sure, and so, you know, I was involved in that conversation. It was a year and a half ago, so I know there was a lot of conversations. I visited the site many times. I'd be happy to visit it with you and chat with you about it.
I do, but I have a long list, so if someone else wants to go before me.
Sure. Daniel.
Card has a question.
From your point of view, what would you say is the best way if somebody sees a sidewalk or sees a road or a street that is ponding or, you know, potholes or what have you, What would you recommend the best way to try to get that fixed? Reach out to Public Works, reach out to the city of Jacksonville?
MyJax. The best way is to get put in a ticket on MyJax. Those tickets are sorted, and if it's an issue that needs to go to maintenance, if it's a pothole, that goes to maintenance. It goes on a list. If it's an issue that's not quite as easy of a fix, it might come to my team to look at developing a drainage solution. But MyJax is certainly the place I would start, especially for those, you know, smaller issues. If it's a big neighborhood issue, you know, that might be something you would want to talk with your district councilman with. But MyJax is the easiest and best source. And 630 City is the same thing. You can call 630 City and they'll create a ticket. So that would be my recommendation. That's why when I go to community meetings and they ask that same question, you know, I want my road resurfaced, you know, I have a pothole, or there's ponding, or, you know, my driveway's under, all those things, that goes into a database. There's a list. We clear all those issues one by one. And so, you know, that doesn't mean it'll happen tomorrow. These things take a lot of time. But that is the best and easiest way.
Go through that step first. Go through MyJax first.
Yeah, go to MyJax first. And, again, you get a notification. We get a notification. You can track that ticket. You know, we'll go through it and we'll evaluate it. And, you know, I will say this. There's a lot of drainage problems throughout this whole city. Although the drainage problem in front of your house might seem really bad, there's likely one in someone else's house that's worse. And so, you know, we have a prioritized drainage system rehab list. We have somewhere around 100 projects on that. And so, you know, what we do is we evaluate projects, put them on the list, and then slowly move through that list as we get funding. And so, you know, if you're on the list and you're not in the ones that are getting built, that means someone's property who's worse off than yours is getting built.
So that leads to a second question. How do you prioritize?
So there's a couple different ways. So the first thing is, where does the flooding go? Is the flooding stay in the road? Does the flooding come into your yard? Does the flooding come into your house, right? Into the house is like you're way up at the top. How many properties does this affect? Is this one house, three houses, 10 houses, commercial? You know, those are kind of go into it. Also, how big is the project? If this is a $10 million project, we can't just quickly do a quick plan and send a crew out. So if it's a problem that we feel like we can quickly and easily address, that might go to the top of the list just because we can get that one done. Occasionally, we'll be doing work in an area unrelated, and we'll just, hey, this is not, it's, you know, in the, not on the top of the list, but if we just combine it with this project we're doing now, we can kind of take care of it. So in general, and I can get you a copy of the evaluation matrix, but basically it's how bad is it and how many people does it affect are the two big criteria. And then it gets more into, you know, how complicated is the project? Can we fix it, right? There's problems that we know that we have absolutely no solution for. There's nowhere to run a pipe. There's nowhere to put a pond. We can't do anything without buying a house, tearing it down, those type of things. So if it's extremely difficult, it might go further down the list just because we don't really know how we're going to address it.
So my questions mainly have to do with the, and obviously this is before your time, obviously before you came in, but it has to deal with the council auditor's report that was done on construction-related vendor audits, 869. We talked about it in a couple meetings ago, but I wanted to get a chance to talk to someone from Public Works about some of the issues that were found and the resolutions that you said would kind of be built in to kind of resolve them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to work backwards. One of the things that the audit had found was notification to JSEB vendors about payments within 3 days and how that was something that wasn't always necessarily occurring, and that both Mr. Long and I forgot the procurement division chief's name off the top of my head. But both
currently Dustin Freeman, but I don't know if it was Dustin when they did the audit. I don't remember.
It was. Yeah. You guys said that you would work to kind of make sure that you'd work between the EEO office, Public Works, and accounting to try to figure out how that would be resolved. Can you talk about if you know anything in terms of how that is kind of coming into fruition?
Sure. So we're working with procurement to update our procedures. They're updating their procedures. Procurement's going through an entire kind of restructuring of how they're doing business. And so these issues are being resolved in that kind of bigger umbrella for procurement. And on the public works side, you know, we got recommendations basically to create some standard operating procedures and things like that, which we are developing now. And you know, just to take a step back and kind of put that audit into framework, if you look at the time that that audit was completed, it was a big period of it was in the middle of COVID. And so some of the things they identified were like, you know, certain individuals didn't sign these forms that they're supposed to. Well, because what we were doing at the time was we were just emailing those confirmations around. So if you look at the form, it doesn't have the signatures, but we have emails that say, I approved it. So there's a little bit of just, it was a strange time in the world in that audit. But, you know, basically the Public Works is just, we're developing some standard operating procedures. You know, how do we get invoices paid? We have those procedures, but we don't have them all, you know, really well documented. And so we're just going through and kind of upgrading our business practices to have those SOPs in place and very easy to follow. And, you know, things like getting invoices paid timely and things like that, again, super important, right? Especially for JSEBs. JSEBs are smaller companies. They need that funding. If they put an invoice in, that means they need to get paid really quick just to keep themselves afloat, right? Totally understand that. And we focus on that today. You know, we know that if a JSEB puts in an invoice, we have to turn it around and get it back really quick. We have contractual obligations to do so. And so, you know, we're, between us and procurement, we've had two or three meetings with procurement. We've had maybe half a dozen internal meetings with Public Works, you know, starting to develop these SOPs and things. So over the next few months, those will be available for anyone to review. If that answer your question?
It does, and it causes a follow-up as well. On the beginning end, after a bid has been awarded, and for some of these contracts, they may or may not have a JSEB requirement. That part, you're the expert in, I couldn't tell you. But I'm curious, how does Public Works go about making sure that when they have bids out and they're awarded, that these contractors are actually giving opportunities to JSEBs to be able to subcontract?
So that's a JSEB office procedure. They go through and audit the, because when we get an invoice from a contractor, it includes all the invoice or the paid invoices from their subcontractors. So it's relatively easy to take a invoice and say, okay, this much went to the prime and this much went to subcontractors. And if you identify which of those subcontractors are JSEBs, it's not a very difficult task to pull that information out. So I believe that's being done by the JSEB office. You know, we don't have a procedure for confirming that other than when the bid comes in, we confirm that the form they submit, which is the JSEB form, has a JSEB vendor, has a dollar amount that they're going to provide that meets that percentage criteria. So we verify that before we even go to procurement. JSEB office verifies it again before it gets awarded. And engineering doesn't monitor that JSEB participation other than providing the information to procurement with the payments for them to go. And I believe they go back and kind of audit those, not like they're watching it regularly, but they do audit the contracts. And so occasionally we'll get a notification from especially some of our design build contracts, which are multiple projects under one contract, that, hey, you know, their percentage is maybe getting a little bit under the target. You might need to call your contractor and say, hey, you may need to make sure that on the next project you include a big JSEB component. So that has happened in the past. But, you know, as far as, you know, policing every invoice, we don't do that. We just, at the end, we make sure that the goals were met. And we always meet the goals, far exceed the goals of JSEB.
Okay.
Overall, you know, citywide, we're way over the goal.
Okay. So I'm going to go back on some of the beginning parts of it. When a bid is awarded and you guys work with OGC to kind of come up with a contract, is there standard terms that you guys use consistently on each one of your contracts? Is it kind of varied?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. And then once those are attributed, do you assign an engineer or a contract manager within Public Works to be responsible for the whole life cycle of that agreement to make sure that they're living up to the terms?
Absolutely. So we assign a project manager before it even goes to bid. We assign a project manager as soon as the project is identified. Like, we have projects now that won't even get any money for another year that we already have project managers working on them. So the entire life of a project, as soon as it's identified to us as a project, we assign a project. And sometimes that project manager is me, right? Like, it might be me for a while until it gets to a point where it's ready to be handed off to, you know, I have a design team and a construction team. So my design team has a bunch of professional engineers. At some point, I can take it to them and say, okay, this is a project that you're going to now manage. And they will typically prepare the RFP, put the RFP out, make sure that the projects get graded, make sure that procurement awards it, make sure that the contract gets awarded, and then the design team manages that contract all the way till the project is ready to go to construction. When the project goes to construction, that same design engineer puts it back out to bid for construction. When the construction contract comes back in, that engineer walks down the hall to my construction side and says, here's a project that's ready to go to construction. There's a literal handoff. It's more electronic now, but we take the project and it goes from engineering to the construction side. The status goes from design to construction. And then the construction manager handles all the way until after the warranty period is over. Warranty period is over, that same construction manager walks back across the hall to the design engineer and says, this project's done, close it out. And they do the close out, final change orders, get everything zeroed out, and get the project off the books. I don't know if that is more than you wanted to know, but that's...
you'll learn. I like details, so that's actually good. So, FYI, so my background is in procurement. I work for... until tomorrow.
I don't know what that little buzzing is. I'm keep hearing.
But I'm a contracting officer, and even with the state, and I'm sure FDOT has to do it, there's required training that anyone that is assigned to a contract at a certain value is required to do, so that way they know, based on state statute, how they're supposed to administer a contract. That's just to make sure that every single contract is being administered consistently. The city doesn't necessarily have the same type of requirement, although I know that's something that procurement and the new procurement code may change. Right now, do you guys do any kind of training or CLEs at all, just to make sure that all your project managers understand how to manage the contract? Because I'm seeing a lot of instances in the audit about how the term may go over, we may do a change order after the contract expires, and then it seemed like the solution was just to change the definition of what expired means, as opposed to living within the term.
That was a lot of questions in one. Sorry. But I'll try to answer as many as I can. And so I'll start with the last one. So as far as, you know, there are some things. So there are times where in the past we have had an ongoing contract and we thought the new contract would be in place sooner, but it didn't get there in time. And so we have very necessary services that we can't have gaps in contracts, right? And so I'm not defending it. In the past, that has happened. The contract ends and we go back and say, let's pretend like it didn't end and extend the term. And, you know, between procurement and the general counsel, I'm not a procurement specialist or an attorney. We checked all the boxes. Everybody was happy, and we moved forward. Again, it was COVID. Things were strange. I could list a room of excuses. I won't. We now have a list of all of our ongoing contracts, and proactively, 9 months before that contract expires, if we're not 100% certain that we're going to have a replacement contract, we go ahead and at 9 months add 6 more months to it, so that never happens again. So you're right. You should never take a contract that expired and then reinstate it. It has happened for reasons that were important to the city. Again, a lot of that was before me. I started in 2019, so this audit started, I believe, 2 years before I got here. However, it was completed while I was here, just as a, you know, to be clear. So now that I answered that one, I forgot the first three questions.
I'll make it more simple. My worry is, because you have the project manager, like you described, that's responsible for it, you have the construction manager that's responsible for the whole project, you have a different third party that's responsible for monitoring the success of it or whether or not they're doing it, there's a whole lot of hands in there, and it doesn't seem like someone is responsible for making sure that holistically everything's being done within the terms that have been agreed upon. And if no one has the legal training to do it and OGC's not responsible for it, then who's making sure that they're living up to what the contract says?
Sure. And so from a technical standpoint, the contract says you have to build a driveway, right? We have technical staff that goes out there, measures, tools, whatever they need, inspectors. They built a driveway, the driveway's done, right? So that's the part we handle. The same with, hey, we built a driveway and you owe me $1,000 for that. We check that, check the contract. They're right that we owe them $1,000. We submit the invoice that goes to our administration people. They check the purchase orders and, okay, they told us it was going to cost $1,000. Here's a $1,000 bill. Pay them $1,000. Now, who is sort of, from a legal side, is kind of just making sure that you're probably right. There's not someone kind of above that just saying, hey, is all this working?
Or like saying, like, let's just say you had a contract that says they have to complete certain aspects of the project within a certain timeline. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then the city gets a credit or there's a certain level of monetary benefit that we get. Who looks at that?
So that would be the construction manager. And so the construction manager would say, okay, your contract says that you had 200 days, today's day 199, and you're not done. What's going on? And so there are liquidated damages, which are not used often, but in cases where the contractor really is just unnecessarily delaying the project, there's a financial implication that they lose money every single day, they don't catch up. On the other side, a contractor says, okay, you have 200 days to do a project, but if in the middle of those 200 days a hurricane comes through, that 200 days doesn't stay concurrent. You pause the clock, and then, okay, maybe a week or 2 weeks later, you start the clock again, right? So that you're technically adding days to the contract. So it's not uncommon at all for weather, material availability is a big problem now, things that I would say are outside of the contractor's control to delay them. But it's certainly within our responsibilities to manage that and say, if you're not meeting your goal, then we are going to be the ones to implicate whatever is in the contract that we can.
Let me make sure I clarify the question. So, Mr. Henry, your question is how are those items verified? How are you making who's making sure, and how are they making sure that those terms of the contract are being followed?
Right.
So I think we had talked before we came in here about the process that we take and what a construction manager does, yep. and Ms. Pryor's question about what does the third party do. So is it an okay time to kind of integrate that question? And
it's
kind
actually
of
it's a perfect time to
answer that. Okay, so the question that was actually in the minutes was, why are we hiring third party folks? But be aware, just like Robin said, we have a construction manager who is on the job the entire time during construction. They are making all the decisions. So the process is there are, in most cases, are monthly, sometimes they're different frequency, construction management meetings. It includes the city employee, our inspector that you referred to, as well as the contractor. And I've attended many of those, having been on the other side. And in those meetings, there are set agenda items that are discussed at every meeting. It includes the schedule, the invoicing, is there invoicing matching the days of work on the job? What are the next activities that are coming up? So it is a very methodical process that is utilized throughout construction to ensure that all of those requirements are being met. So and what are our third party folks doing? They are out there, boots on the ground. So we have one construction manager on the city side, but VIA and the other firms that you might see who are doing that, they're making sure that the proper testing is done on the concrete. Those results come in. They're making sure that everybody is notified when there's going to be lane closures. There's a number of things, but every decision, whether it's a pay application that comes in, goes through our construction manager with the city. There's nothing that's approved by the third party provider. They are there as basically an extension of staff to ensure that we have somebody with eyes on the job at all times. But all decisions are being made through the city, and we feel like it actually adds to the quality of the work because we've got additional folks to be watching the project. And to Ms. Pryor's questions, are there things that don't come out perfectly? Yes. A lot of these projects are balancing different objectives. We're balancing maintaining the integrity of the neighborhood, keeping historic elements in place, along with drainage, you know, aesthetics and all of those things. And sometimes, you know, do we get the balance right every time? Perhaps not, but we, it's a lot of elements that go into making those decisions. And if you see room for improvement and there's areas that you think, you know, we didn't get the balance quite right, then, you know, we want to speak with you about, you know, whether what we can fix and also what lessons we can take into future projects as well. So
one question to you is, make sure I understand it correctly. So you're saying even with the project managers continue to stay on the job, you know, stay on the job as far as, you know, overseeing those projects into the end, right? I'm understanding that. But as well as for the third party, is the project manager still, you know, overseeing even when there's a third party involved as well?
Absolutely.
So they still can oversee all of that into the end?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. I just want to make sure I understand.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And so I would say there are rare cases where the city provides money to a developer and the city has no involvement in the construction at all. My office has no involvement in it. So there are rare cases where a developer handles the construction in entirety and the city just provides funding. That's for larger developer agreement type projects that, you know, for whatever reason, Office of Economic Development, whoever decided to participate in that construction. So those are typically not managed through construction. So that's, I just wanted to put that out there, that not every single project is, but every single project that construction and engineering manages, we have a city employee who manages the third-party inspector. The inspector is really just collecting data in the field and providing it to our staff, and our staff makes all decisions, make all payments, everything like that. I think that's the question you're asking.
Okay. Thank you. Question.
Yes, a couple kind of joined together. How many project managers does Public Works have, and how many projects are assigned to each one of these project managers? Who determines the qualification for a manager to be a project manager on a particular project? Kind of go together.
Sure. And so the first question: how many project managers? So I have two sides of the house, right? I have construction and engineering. On the engineering side, there are 7 professional engineers. And so those 7 people, along with a couple of managers that do a little bit of project management. So really there's 10 individuals that manage design projects. Now, how is that split up amongst them based on individual qualifications? Me and the my deputy, who's the Project Works manager, who manages that staff, we work together to say, okay, this is a vertical firehouse project. We have a person who's really good at doing managing firehouse projects, right? And so not everybody does all the same type of things, but we have one person who does most of the bridges, and we have one person who does most of the vertical construction, and a few folks who manage drainage and road. So it's project by project. It's based on their skill set, their workload, and really their desire. You know, there are some projects where we've let people who maybe aren't super experts at roadway do a small roadway project to kind of build up their expertise, because again, 90% of the time or more, the project engineer is actually working with a consultant engineer, and a consultant is actually doing the engineering design, and they're just acting as a project manager, right? And so I think that answers the question on the engineering side. Now on the construction side, there are 4 construction managers, 4 people who manage about 10 to 12 projects each at any given time. There's about 40 to 50 active construction projects at any time. And so, again, those 4 individuals manage between 10 and 15 projects based on what the project is and how large it is, right? Like, one project might be a $90 million project, and so he might have 1, but this guy might have 10, but they're all, you know, $500,000 projects. So there's not an exact science to it, but we break it up based on skill and workload. And, you know, to that point, so we have 4 contract construction managers. Those 4 managers, 10 to 12 projects each. I have 1 field inspector for the entire city of Jacksonville, 1 person whose job it is to go out and look at projects. And so, obviously, that person cannot go look at 50 projects every single day. And so that's where the consultant inspectors kind of step in for us on a project-by-project basis. We hire them and say, you're going to come work for us for this project, and you're going to be out there every single day. You're going to take pictures. Every time a material shows up, you're going to test it. Every time anything happens, You're going to collect data. That data is going to come back to us, and then we can use that data to make sure that they're meeting the contract requirements.
Thanks. Oh, I'm gonna.
There was something else that Commissioner Tyson asked that I didn't hear you answer. Was about the requirements of the project managers. What the requirements were to be one. If I understood his question correctly, did I misunderstand you?
Qualifications,
yeah.
So to qualify for the professional engineer position is pretty straightforward. You have to be a professional engineer.
Right.
And so, you know, we hire professional engineers who are qualified to do the type of projects that we need to do. So, you know, the PE side, if you have a PE license, then you're by the state qualified to do that. Now, there's not a licensing side on the construction management side. So we have one of the folks that works over there is a PE who has been involved in construction for a long time. So, you know, he's been involved in obviously design and construction, so he's well qualified. The other three have building construction degrees, and so their degree from college is building construction, and they have, you know, a long work history. So the job descriptions have those qualifications in them. You know, there's project public works construction manager and professional engineer are the two job titles for those folks, and so you know, those job descriptions are available, and those descriptions. Yeah, but basically, you know, they've gone to college and gotten a degree, and for the PEs, they've achieved their license. So that means to have a PE license means you have at least 4 years' experience. In
can I? Oh, go ahead. Yeah, for now. Can I follow up on that? I know JEA. I know JEA does a lot of co-ops, particularly when it comes to like people that are in like their junior senior year of college. And the reason why I'm going down this road, I watched your budget presentation when I was going through finance. And I do remember when you were talking about how it's really competitive out there, particularly with a lot of these engineering firms are offering like $79,000, $80,000 right out the gate to get engineers started. And a lot of times the city can't compete with that. So is there any thought to doing something like JEA does, doing co-ops to try to get people in from the front end? Because I imagine a lot of the project managers, the engineers that you have on staff, at a certain point, they're going to want to retire and enjoy the rest of their life. So
Nina wants to jump in. So there are some efforts ongoing to address that. I will say before she speaks up, you know, we do we go to University of North Florida quite regularly, just about once a year, and kind of talk to their graduates and say, hey, I know you haven't been thinking about it, but it might be cool if you come work for the city. We do something very unique. This is not how I started my career. I was in design and construction for a very long time, and about 10 years ago, I went to work for the city of Jacks Beach, and I was like, okay, this is different, but I really like it, right? And just real quick on the salaries, for example, an associate engineer who's an engineer who's graduated from college but does not have their license, our starting salary is about $60,000. Everyone else is probably between 80 and 90. So you can imagine it's very difficult for me to hire someone right out of school, even though I think this job is really cool and it's really exciting. If I was 22 and I said, well, I can go over there and make a lot more money, I'd be walking over there.
Are they civil service or appointed?
A mix.
Yeah. So, you know, coming from the private sector, we made great use of our interns and co-ops, and it is a great, it's really win-win because we get to test out our folks before they show up full-time, and then the student gets to learn about what they like to do and what they don't like to do. So what I understand is that we had looked into it earlier, and there were some issues about whether it was collective bargaining or the way that we can, you know, pay an employee that is not typically in the civil service or appointed employee category. But it sounds like, in talking with Steve, that they have worked out some of those things, at least from an apprenticeship standpoint. So maybe we can piggyback off of those potential changes and look for interns. So, but I completely agree with you. That is a great way to get people in the door and get them, you know, in love with this job as much as I love what I'm doing right now. And so it's a very good suggestion, and I think it's something we should definitely take to heart.
Well, I know you guys are going into, well, not you, but the city's going to go into labor contract negotiations this year, so I hope that's a
point that's within those discussions. My last question, I see that when the gas tax was approved, one of the biggest things that council had asked for is for a website to be created. It was jobsforjax.net for people to be able to kind of see the life cycle of different construction-related projects. I know that Mobile Works with JTA, they do that. FDOT kind of does that. The city really doesn't with, like, public works-related work. So I was curious to see if that's something that
there's a website for the city for all the local option gas tax projects.
No, I meant for, like, capital improvement-related projects or projects that Public Works is doing that we would be able to kind of see on a public domain.
Yeah, and so all the projects that are funded through that gas tax, that is available right now today.
No. Yeah, okay.
Right, so I think you were referring to basically all of our CIP projects.
Yes.
And so
I don't know why I said CAP, I meant CIP.
That's fine, but what's great is one of the first things that Robin talked to me about when I showed up, he pulled out this printout of this this GIS-based program that we're working on. It's not close to being released right now, but we are working with IT, with ITD, to have a system that allows you not only just a list, but geographically to identify where our projects are. And so I think Robin was probably a little, he didn't want to, you know, just like most of us engineers, we don't want to talk about stuff until it's there. But yeah, so we are definitely working on a system to be able, internally first, so for city folks to be able to see where the projects are. It allows us to look for two projects that may be overlapping, or, you know, that way it allows us to kind of manage expectations when it comes to construction projects. But also, as we move along over the next year, opening up more so that folks can see exactly where the projects are and typically be able to, you know, touch on one of them, and then a form will come up that'll show you the status and a description of the project. So we are working on that.
And I know there will be a lot of council members that would be excited about something like that, too.
19.
One more question. In a specific area, and it kind of, I guess, trying to figure out who's the responsible party. At Old Middleburg Road South and Sandler Road, subdivision in, they put a light in, and we know that Old Middleburg is going to be widened in project. I'm happy because I'm on Old Middleburg Road. I live on that road. But the question I have and the issue is, at that light, at some point in time, they added a turn lane to go into the Sandler Oaks subdivision. So when they did, they widened somebody. I don't know who, it's the city or somebody told me it was the project or the subdivision.
The developer
had to pay for it. They widened it, and the drain that was there is now higher than the road is. You go in, you bounce up, and when it rains heavy, there's about 4 inches of water, and then you get to where the drain is. It's on that northwest corner. And both sides, oh, and then you go down, when you go past it, they put some, instead of putting in left turn lane northbound on Old Middleburg to turn onto Sandler, they just got stripes across there. So the problem is, when it rains, both of those, that little area they added on the side, potholes out within days. And then you come back, somebody comes back, and I don't know if it's Public Works or they're, you know, somebody go out and look at it. Somebody cut that, throws a few slabs of asphalt down on the little hole that's made, and the next time there's another little hole. So, I mean, it's nothing but a solid line on both sides on the west side of Old Middleburg South on Sandler that just keeps getting washed out, puddled up, and they just keep, but somebody needs to come out there. No, they did something northbound on the one side. They came out and where people were driving around because there's no left turn lane. So they did something, and now somebody yesterday took all the cones out because we saw one of them on a car coming down the street and hung up underneath it, ran over it because they couldn't turn left. It's a major problem, and it's exacerbated by the fact that when it rains and that side washes out, people try to go left to keep from bouncing through the holes. Somebody needs to look at that and find out why that road is lower than the drain is to let the water go somewhere, because you hit it at 20, 25 miles an hour, you, not knowing there's 3 or 4 inches of water there. And there's people that's gone into the other lane and spun cars out and everything. It's a
so that issue is not familiar to me exactly. So I'm managing the widening project. So in a few years, we're going to come through and redo that whole intersection anyway. But it's a different division, but I'll reach out to the maintenance division and see if it's on there.
Down the road.
It's 2.5 years away, yeah. But, you know, and so there's also a balance, too, just in general, when we have an issue like that where we've identified an issue that we know is a problem, but we're maybe 2.5 years from a global solution, there's this conversation about how far do you go with the temporary solution, right? So I don't know the answer. I'm not familiar with the problem, but so you have a decision. How do we completely fix this problem now, even though we know we're going to come back and tear all this stuff up again in 2 years? And so that is based on how bad is the problem, and is it something that could be lived with for 2 years? And if the answer is no, we'll do what we have to do to make sure that it can be used. So I made a note for myself. I'll make sure that the maintenance folks go out and take a look at it. I'm not familiar with it, but I'll follow up with you.
So it depends if you live on their road and have to drive on it 2 or 3 times a day, whether it's something you can live with.
Yeah, and so, you know, I don't live anywhere close to Old Middleburg Road, so it doesn't affect me one way or the other. So, however, you know, there's a lot of people who do live in that area.
Whoever you have come out and look at it, just definitely give me a call, and I'll be happy to.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Oh, you made a statement about the, you know, when you're hiring people, and there are what they call constructional engineers, correct? My girlfriend is one.
So there are construction engineers, yeah.
You might not want to be, you know.
Yeah, and so again, you know, I'm an engineer. A lot of my career was managing. I was a resident engineer, is what they call it in New York. So I was the guy who every single day I was there only in case there was an engineering question that came up. So I was doing engineering, but it was only for construction. And so there certainly are plenty of engineers who focus their career on construction because, you know, I like to say it's easy to sit in a room and draw lines on a piece of paper and say, go build this. To go into the real world where there's really things around, trees, other, you know, it's a whole different thing than just taking a set of plans out and putting it in the ground, especially once you start going into the ground, because you may not realize it, but especially downtown, you put a shovel in the ground, you're going to hit something. There's nowhere, anywhere down, and Springfield's the same way. You dig a hole, you're going to hit something. And so, you know, you got to do this kind of spider web thing a lot of times just to get around those things.
I only mention it because you guys talk about, you know, recruiting and what happened. That's like I thought about, you know, there is a such thing, I'm quite sure you know as well, as construction engineers, because I have a friend that's one. That's
absolutely. And, you know, the good thing is the economy is really good right now still, right? So construction is still going great. So that also means that all the contractors are very busy and they're paying their people very well. They're all happy to be there. And so it's very difficult for me to entice someone away from that.
I know. I got
Can I just follow up on that? I saw that, I know during the budget you guys got a new FTE, and I saw the posting about the public works contract construction manager. Is that that job or is that something else?
That's not right. No. That's a separate job. Yeah.
Okay.
However, if you know someone for that job, please. That's a very important one. That's not the new one, but that's a very important one.
Talking about that looks over the whole business. Right?
So I believe that's the person who actually manages the resurfacing project, which is a citywide project, extremely important project. It's in a different division, so I don't manage that, folks. But I think that's
all under mine.
Yeah.
The specifics about the new FTE that you mentioned, and so our intent is to apply that to Robin's group and have that person be an additional project manager to overlook some of our projects.
No field inspector?
Well, you know, we only have one. About 40 of them, so deciding to start hiring field, first of all, extremely difficult to hire. They're very well paid in the private sector. And so, you know, a decision was made long, long before I was here that we would outsource that inspection. If that decision ever changes and we start hiring inspectors, that's certainly something we can do.
We definitely appreciate you all coming out. Thank you so much. Thanks for being diligent and coming and answering the questions. Appreciate it very much.
And I'll follow up on Old Middleburg Road for you.
righty, ladies and gentlemen. It's 5 o'clock. Okay, so I'm looking at the agenda. If you haven't already, hopefully you have reviewed the August 3rd and September 7th, 2023. And we look forward to seeing you in the future.
What I'm fascinated too is because that's what I did was procurement for 18 years. Oh, wow. Procurement, if they're going to do something to the code, that I did a lot of amendments through the years, I'd be very, very interested because you've got invitation to negotiate, you've got design build, you've got design bid build. There are a lot of ways that they can really, especially with your experience too, I think that's something we need to look at very closely. And I'd be glad to use whatever expertise I have to assist y'all, you know, whatever area.
Especially okay. On the contract administration side.
Yeah, exactly.
We have.
So what I started doing is we started having training, and I would do 3-hour seminars on, because you got some JSEBs that are great workers, and they got a truck and they've done things, but they don't read the contracts, they don't understand bonding, they don't understand pay when paid, education is really a big deal. And you can say whatever you want. You know, I represent utility contractors too. You know, I'm their general counsel, and I've done other things since I've got out. But the ability of a contractor to squeeze a subcontractor, especially if they want future work, it's a very, very delicate balance, and especially if something is going wrong on a project. We just have to train people up, train the inspectors. From the outside, I see you have city inspectors. One inspector will go to one project, and it's good enough. And a different inspector will see the same thing on the other one, and it drives everybody crazy. But I come in, and there's a lot that I can learn from y'all. My experience is only how the money was spent, and never how we got it. That's something that we could utilize. And I will encourage you, if anybody thinks that I won't be useful, I don't come up, you know, for another few days, it's not too late. I can spend more time with my grandchildren. But I look forward to serving with you, if that's the will of the council.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
FYI, the procurement bill, it's going to be coming up the next cycle of committee because I think they've finished the last delay. So
it has come out of committee.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was going to say our November meeting, that's the invited speakers, is the chief of procurement and the city inspector general to talk about that rewrite.
Can we get a copy of that in underlined and strike through? I mean, the first thing I really like to look at and see what they've done.
All right.
Because everything that you're talking about, not paying folks, y'all have under 126 responsibility. If somebody complains and a contractor's not doing it, you know what you do? You take them off the qualified bidders list. And once that happens, that affects their bonding capacity on other things. But you want competition, too, because there's so much work going on. So there's philosophical and theological considerations for everything that we do here. But I'd be glad to share it with you, and you all have got really great questions, and I'll try not to be a fact giver and just try to be a fact finder and work with y'all.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, definitely. Have a good one.
Who is he? I'm sorry.
Oh. I'm just going to be a new member. He'll be a
I don't know who he is.
He'll be a new member. He's okay. Going to be sworn in soon.
Well, rules on Tuesday, so he's going to be approved next Tuesday.
Okay.
And all right. Next month. Okay. Let's get started because we definitely can't be a certain hour. Last time they pretty much told us we had to get out of here. So we're not having that again. So let's go ahead.
Can I move approval of the August 3rd and September?
I'm trying to help you out.
No, second.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Yes. Okay, I have a motion. Thank you very much, Mr. Daniel Henry. Okay. So I have a motion to approve August the 3rd and September the 7th minutes.
A second.
Yes, so moved.
All right, thank you. Public comment, we don't have anyone at this moment, so we'll move on to auditors.
Well, we did.
That's right, my bag. Vote. So all in favor of the minutes?
Aye.
Yeah, disapprove? Questions? Okay, it's been totally approved, moved and second. So August the 3rd and the September the 7th has been approved and second. Thank you. All right, we have no public comment, and we'll go on to auditor's report.
Yes, ma'am, through the chair of the commission. The council auditor's office has not released any reports since the last true commission meeting, as our office was working on getting the budget through the cycle. So that concludes my report.
Does this mean you all get to go on vacation?
Actually, I start tomorrow now.
I knew to ask. Are you doing anything fun? Are you going anywhere?
Up to Virginia. Up to Virginia. Yep.
Madam Chair.
Exactly. Okay. Now we'll go on to committee report.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I have a question. So I was wondering if you have had an opportunity to get together the information that I requested a couple of months ago about the reports where you have told certain departments that they need to make changes and whether they've implemented those changes yet.
I mean, are you referring to the system, the tracking system that we have?
Correct.
I think we have anyway, let's put it that way. I have not, because the audit manager is also responsible for the budget, and he was extremely busy with that. So now that it's over with, I can work on that. But yeah, we didn't have time for that because the other moving parts going on.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead and move on now. Okay. Committee's reports. The audit committee.
None due to no audits.
Thank you. Legislative tracking report committee.
I was gonna ask Jeff a question, but
I got nothing to report.
Okay, thank you. But
I like the email that you sent, based on what Council President Salem said, because I feel like he was conjuring our sentiments for the last 3 years. So
did you watch the video?
I did
as well.
Okay.
He said, I wish he'd said some more things,
he'll come back in 2 weeks and say those things when they come back.
Is it your sense, based on his comments and based on what they're trying to do with this budget amendment for the budget they had 2 years ago, that there'll be some resolution in terms of making sure that these kind of things don't continually happen every year? I think we kind of go through this whole cycle.
I think that I presume Nat Ford will be there, either he or the new CFO at JTA, and I'm sure that the council president will make it very clear, as he did this week, that he does not ever want to see this happen again. So I presume he will convey that very forcefully. Now, they're an independent authority. I mean, it's not like city council really has a hammer that they can do anything to them, but they will certainly get the message, I'm sure.
And Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, I was watching finance, but I was also working, but he was more upset with the amount of time it took them to bring it to.
Yes, that was the crux of it, is that when he was the chairman of finance a couple of years ago, this happened where they asked to amend a budget 2 years back, and he told them then, this is unacceptable, you can't wait 2 years to amend a budget. And then when it happened again, that's what brought him to finance this week. So yet it's not the fact that they need an amendment, it's the fact that it takes 2 years. And then when Jessica Shepler came up to the podium and said, well, the board approved the resolution in January to ask for the amendment, how did it take until October for the bill to come along?
She smiled nicely.
Did smile very nicely. And so we will find out in 2 weeks at finance how things happen.
What I don't understand is why no one asked why they keep going over budget. I mean, I've asked that before, and I understand there are some, but every single time they're going over budget.
I imagine that is also a question that will be asked.
I just think it's the underlying assumptions in terms of how much they set in terms of spending levels for certain areas. But that's just my opinion. I'm not an accountant. You're the accountant.
I certainly know that during the course of the year, they get federal grants. You know, they get money comes in from different places that adds to their revenue, which they then want to expend. And I would imagine also that they don't want to come back to council asking for amendments every time that happens, but you know, at least once or twice a year, it doesn't seem like that would be too onerous to come and say, we got this grant, can you amend our budget to up it to cover that grant amount and let us expend it?
Yeah, there's other independent agencies that do that routinely. I mean, JSO does that routinely.
Comment? I have none. We just in the future, I just said definitely because last month we kind of went over and then was kind of told that, you know, a certain time we have to cap off. So just make sure we be mindful of time. Old business? Is there any old business?
Through the chair, I'm just curious if we sent the letter to City Council about our concern about the disbursement in advance for the Mayport Village Partnership. I saw where you sent us something, and someone else has brought up that concern, but I was just wondering if we had drafted and sent that letter.
I did, yes.
Thank you.
The council got that.
Thank you.
FYI, they approved it. Yeah. They had the concern, but they approved it.
They approved it anyway?
They did. The council auditor raised the same concern that this is not the way we normally do business, giving people money in advance like that. And then Bill Gulliford, former council member Bill Gulliford, who's involved in the Mayport partnership, came and explained that, you know, we're doing the best we can, we're doing fundraising, but it's hard to raise money for things like this. But the work needs to be done. There's 7 acres of city-owned land right in the middle of Mayport that somebody needs to be planning its future, and we're trying to do that. So the committee was convinced and said, go ahead.
Daniel, don't look at me like that. I'm just saying.
Okay. So we're going to go on to new business. I think we put it last month. We kind of postponed it, and now it's brought back up again about the bylaws revision. Yes.
I think we have to wait again.
Say again?
I believe we should probably wait again because this was Mr. Day's.
Let me ask you.
Go ahead.
Let me ask the chair this: is there anything in this that we need to ask Mr. Day specifically about, or
at the very bottom? It was more at the very bottom.
There's a few things I have on it. I mean, if you're ready to vote, when we go into comments, I have a few issues with it that I'm not for. If that's what you're asking.
No, I was just waiting for Commissioner Barr.
Do we need?
Are we gonna go ahead and do it today?
We can go ahead. We can vote for it today.
Okay. Then I just to get you in proper posture, okay. I move to approve the proposed bylaws revisions.
Okay. Have a second? Question.
Is there a second?
Second. There is no second. It's not going anywhere. No.
Dies.
Yep.
Okay. FYI, I was trying to do that so that way you could ask your questions.
Well, if there's no second and it dies, there's no need to. It's going nowhere, right?
Right. It's not going. It's dead.
There must be other issues.
Okay. Addressed it.
He can bring it back again if he wants.
I can bring it back up again, but at this time, it is. Okay, Commissioner's comment. It was great meeting. Get a lot of questions asked, a lot of things I was curious about. Hopefully in the future, they will definitely properly supervise their projects, beginning to the end.
It just seems like they don't have enough project managers.
I know, and I guess their budget don't allow them.
Manager.
Right, and they just need to hire more people. That's not on their level. Okay, so the next meeting will be November the 9th.
Can I ask Jeff a question? If I have a list of questions for Mr. Freeman ahead of time before he comes on November the 9th, should I just send that to you for him?
Sure. You can send it to me, and I will forward it on to him. And also, I think Mr. LaSalle, the city inspector general, is going to come.
Oh, he's going to be fun.
He's on there, too. Yeah, that sure is.
Okay. So, yes, if you have questions in advance, send them to me, and I'll send them to him so he can be prepared for it.
Fair for it, yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Definitely. Well, I appreciate that. So I make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's properly adjourned.